Ben Strober's dead to me. He bailed.
He did.
He's doing too many other things today. No time for us, apparently. Nick Ashew on the Team 980, so we were going to have Ben Strober here. Not that it was a big trade the Wizards made, but they traded for Trey Mann. Cam Whitmore traded to the Cavs. They're going to waive him. I really thought Cam Whitmore would actually get more of an opportunity here in D.C. with this team. You know, it's obvious, though, for me, seeing where the Wizards have been. I mean, trading for somebody like Trey Mann, like, I get it. Like, he's not a big star. It's not a huge name necessarily. But they were looking for another veteran guard. DeMar DeRozan, who's, you know, been an all-star. They've been talking to him for a while. They made a two-year offer to Russell Westbrook. He decided to retire instead. Of course, people are making jokes about that. Oh, Russell Westbrook got an offer from the Wizards, and he decided to retire. He got offers from other people, too. Shut up. This Wizards team's not the same as it was before. Look, there is more and more of a groundswell now around this Wizards team that I'm seeing just across all forms of media, social media and otherwise, where people are looking at this team going, they could be fun. The Wizards are going to be one of those teams that's, you know, they're a league pass team. Outside of D.C. or outside of, you know, wherever, there are going to be people that are wanting to watch this team play. There's going to be more expectations, too. I mean, look, I've always said this, right? Like, I haven't always said it, but it's been more of a recent thing. If you look, like, there are three teams out of the four major sports in D.C. One team is the Caps that's in their own world because as long as Ovi's around, they're retooling that roster. But again, it's all going to be about Ovi until Ovi retires. So I always put the Capitals to the side here. The Nationals, the Commanders, and the Wizards are all rebuilding. All of them. They're all in different stages. But if you watch how they're approaching it, there are different approaches that are certainly there. Now, for the Nats, it's a rebuild from a rebuild. I mean, we all know we never got to watch this team really defend a World Series. 2020 was a 62-game schedule. They were hurt, and they sold the team off, basically, and traded everybody away the next year. And that was 2021, and they've been rebuilding ever since. But the goal was to obviously get younger and build up through the farm system, similar to the way that they did under Mike Rizzo to build a team that won a World Series. The Commanders have been in their own world because they had to rebuild from literally the top down. I mean, ownership all the way down. So that was in its whole other world right there. And then you got the Wizards that finally leaned into something they should have done a long time ago. Really. I mean, they should have traded Bradley Beal 2 years before they did. You would have gotten a lot more back in return from him. And I get it. It's hard. It's hard to trade a guy that fans love and it's getting you 30 points a game because peak Bradley Beal could score. I mean, he was a bucket. We all know that. There was nobody else on the roster, but he was a bucket. But they just kept paying him and paying him and paying him until there were no more max deals. And then it was like, oh, yeah, sure, after the no-trade clause on top of that, let's make this harder on ourselves. Sure, we'll give you a no-trade clause, Bradley Beal, and then we'll trade you for some second-round picks. Now, again, those picks have been flipped. You got a front office now that's smart, resourceful, and has really found ways to build this roster into what it's become. But the Wizards have built their team, and I use the comparison a lot because it works. It's the Thunder and Spurs, and it's through the draft, and it's young players, and it's player development. And when you have a young roster, it can't be just a young roster. You got to start throwing in some veterans, right? Which they have. I mean, Trey Mann now is going to add that to this team. You bring back Chris Middleton. You've got, in their own way, Anthony Davis and Trey Young, which could be good, could be bad. It really depends on who's happy there, who isn't, whatever, you know, that whole situation. But the Wizards at least now have a strong mix of players that tells you this is a roster that's ready to be a playoff team. I mean, it really is. And that's honestly, right, that's the expectation for them. Because you get the number one overall pick. You have at least right now on the roster, Trae Young, guy's been an all-star. Anthony Davis, guy's been an all-star. Put aside how many games they'll play, who's going to be there, who's not, whatever the case is. Let's just look at the roster alone. And I know on paper is dangerous. But you've got a couple of veterans out there that are mixed with younger guys. Keyshawn George, who's shown us he can be really good. Alex Saar, the development from year one to year two. Huge growth. Now, I know he's hurt, going to recover from surgery this offseason, so that's going to be a different situation there. A.J. Dabonsa, I mean, the ceiling, we know how high the ceiling is for A.J. Dabonsa. But even look at their bench. Their bench, they have a ton of depth. This Wizards team has somebody like Trey Mann, who is a good player, right? He's way down the depth chart, essentially, at this point. You're going to have Bob Carrington as a backup guard. Trey Johnson, who is getting Ray Allen comparisons. I'm not ready to do that yet, but in terms of the ability for him to score and shoot and take a jump from year one to year two, we saw that. Bilal Coulibaly, a great great swing man that's going to defend the perimeter for you. DeAndre Ayton is a backup center, not as a starter. I know he lacks a lot defensively, but guy to come off the bench, rebound, get you some buckets in the post. And then Chris Middleton's on this roster, too. And on top of that, you got Will Riley, who I love. Will Riley is going to end up being looked at as a steal of last year's draft. Picked in, 21st overall, something along those lines, whatever it is. He's that prototypical stretch 6'10 guy that can put the ball on the floor. And you've seen the growth. You've seen the development. They got some other younger, deeper guys on this roster. This is a good team. It doesn't mean that everything's going to just click right at the beginning of the season, because they haven't really played with Trae Young. They haven't played with Anthony Davis at all. And unless they trade him, he's going to be out there at the beginning. Is Alex Sarr healthy? Does he come off the bench? Or is minutes limited? Whatever, right? A.J. Dabonsa, what does his role look like? Because A.J. Dabonsa is the face of the Wizards. But he doesn't have to be the number one guy. He doesn't have to be the guy for them his rookie year. That's why you paid Trae Young $212 million. He needs to be the guy. The face of the organization, though, tends to be the long-term future, and the hope is that A.J. Dabonsa is that guy, right? The homegrown number one overall pick, maybe a league MVP one day, turns this team into a contender. That's the type of talent we're talking about here. And you know what I've said. Trae Young doesn't make teams better other than, the floor is low to mid-level playoff team. Go look at the Hawks. The Hawks were better once they traded him, by far. And they made one Eastern Conference Finals, and the rest of the time they were barely in the play-in. But right now, if you get to the play-in, if you're the Wizards, that's an accomplishment. It is. That's the next step. They won 17 games last year. Now, yeah, we all know what they were doing at the end of the season. And it was mission accomplished. You can wash your hands and say you did it. Now you get to move forward. This Wizards team has a good mix now of veterans and young talent. My only concern, and this is why I didn't really want the Russell Westbrook thing to happen, even though we kind of found out about it afterwards. It's like, you want another veteran guard. Cool. But DeMar DeRozan and Russell Westbrook, these guys are scorers. These guys still want the ball in their hands. I mean, listen, Russell Westbrook in year 18 still averaged, 15 points a game with the Kings? I mean, you know how he plays, right? We saw him last time he was here. It's not the same Russell Westbrook, but he is a put his head down, go kind of guy, right? They honestly need to have the opportunity for a lot of these young guys to be able to develop. You got to have an opportunity for Keyshawn George to get his shots, and A.J. Dabonsa, and Trey Johnson, and Will Riley, Alex Sarr. And they're different types of players, but they all are going to need these opportunities there. But having somebody like a Trey Young or an Anthony Davis, at least at the beginning, if they're healthy and they're out, their defenses at least respect what they can do offensively, right? I mean, Anthony Davis, healthy with the ball in his hands, is still one of the better bigs in the NBA. Trey Young, on a good night, can go get you 30. On a bad night, he goes 3 of 16. So you never know what you're going to get from Trae Young. But defenses still realize he can stretch the floor. He can put it up from 25, 30 feet out, no problem. And a good night for Trae Young means he's going to knock down shots for you. So that does take away some of the attention on some of these other guys like a Trae Young and anybody else. Or sorry, like a Trey Johnson or A.J. Dabonsa or whoever, right? I think the way they've really built this roster is about as good as they could have been given the circumstances that everybody came into. Really. Michael Winger and this staff, everybody, they had to completely gut this. They didn't have a ton of assets either. It's not like they had a bunch of first-round picks like the Thunder have or whoever. And they flipped this thing into a roster that is, again, there's some luck, mainly the lottery. But this is a roster that is, it has, there's thought to it, right? So I always go back and look at the Lakers. When the Lakers had LeBron James, most of the time, the way they built that roster was what LeBron wanted. It was bringing some of his guys in, and for a while early on, it was let's get a bunch of ball handlers around LeBron, and why? The ball needs to be in his hands. Then they try to get more shooters to spread the floor, but it was never a true construction and balance of a roster. The Wizards have that. You've got bigs. You've got some guys that can defend. You've got some rim runners. You've got some shooters. You've got some, young potential talent that could be just a pure scorer right away and an A.J. Dabonsa. They have a lot here with the veteran presence mixed in. Chris Middleton's just a great locker room guy. However many games he plays, however many minutes he plays, he's still there. And if anything, if he becomes what I thought Bobby Wagner could be for the Commanders had they brought him back, maybe he doesn't get a lot of snaps, but he's around, and he's a part of the team, and he's that veteran presence. But I know it takes up a roster spot, and it's a little different. Chris Middleton might miss a ton of time. He could. He's had a lot of injuries over his career. But they've got the depth where they don't need him to play 70 games, right? But they need him there around the team. Because what you have now, if you're the Wizards, is you've got this just big ball of clay, right? You want to mold that thing into exactly what you want it to look like. And if it's the Oklahoma City Thunder, and you want them to be in the same conversation as the Thunder 2, 3, 4 years from now, it starts now. Like, there was a time where talking about the Thunder as NBA champions sounded psychotic, right? They were a basement-dwelling team. But they had a plan, and it went way back, and there were multiple phases of it, because, again, they had the Kevin Durant, James Harden era, too. And at that point, James Harden was a sixth man. He wasn't even a starter for them. But they made the finals. Then the whole thing got broken down, and it was just Russell Westbrook's team, and then they gutted the whole thing and started from scratch, and Sam Presti built it up again. Well, you got people in the Wizards front office that have seen that, that understand it, and that buy into that scenario. But you can't have just young guys on the roster, but you have to be able to give enough of that balance where they're going to grow and actually develop, and you're not going to hold them back. Having that mix and having some veterans in there that teach you how to win. Right, Chris Middleton's won a title with the Bucks. He understands. Anthony Davis, if we want to use him as an example or not, I really don't know where to put him right now, but he did win a title with the Lakers. I know it was in the bubble. Don't make fun of it. That counts. It counts. It was different, but it counts. Because, come on, you were playing in a freaking bubble. It was a pandemic going on. Nobody else has won a championship doing that. The Lakers did. Neither did Jordan. I'm just saying. But, you know, you still have guys that you hope are going to be good influences on this team. Now, Trae Young's the wild card to me. I'm going to be honest with you. Trae Young is the wild card because he doesn't have a great reputation when he left Atlanta as a teammate, as a guy that wanted to, you know, work with some of the younger guys on the roster. That was a younger team they had in Atlanta. And they were a way better team once Trae Young was traded. Now, sometimes guys need fresh starts. They need new opportunities. Sometimes maybe it's a fresh contract like he got. Whatever the case is, I would expect Trae Young at least year one to be just great teammate Trae Young, right? Because he wants to shake the reputation. I mean, come on. The minute he got to the Wizards, he's wearing Wizards jerseys. He's getting kicked out of games when he's not even playing because he's fighting for his teammates. He knows what he's doing. And if that's genuine or not, who cares? Just be a good teammate and be a good leader. And that's the type of stuff that they really need to have on this roster, in this organization here. Because if you have a good veteran presence, it helps build that the culture and the kind of shaping of what you want this organization to be down the road, where people say Washington Wizards and they think of winning organization and championship contender and not team that's in the lottery every single year. I mean, that's really the difference. And look, this is the thing I was always saying too about this team. You're not going to keep every young guy you got on this roster. There's a chance they make trades at the deadline and trade one or two young guys away for maybe somebody else, right? I mean, you may not be able to keep Keyshawn George and Trey Johnson and Bilal Coulibaly and Bob Carrington and Will Riley. I hope they keep Will Riley. But, you know, you may have to move one or two of those guys because you have to start figuring out what this roster is going to look like and who's going to get paid long-term. Because smart organizations, people in the front office, you're not just thinking about this year. You're thinking about what you're doing to set yourself up for down the road. That's what's important, too, because it can't just be about right now. It's one of the reasons why Cam Whitmore came in and already got traded. Now, again, there were health issues and other things that got in the way, too, but there was a lot of stuff, and it never worked out. There's a lot of talent there, but they bring in young guys. And, look, Denny Avdija got traded not because they didn't think he was going to be good, but it's because the timetable just wasn't right, right? I mean, Denny Avdija was going to be due a big contract. They weren't ready to pay anybody. They wanted to gut the roster and have as much financial flexibility as they possibly could. As much as you possibly could. And yeah, is Denny Avdija gone on to have a great career in Portland? Absolutely. Do you maybe still look at that and go, damn, I wish he was doing it for the Wizards? Sure. But he plays the same position as AJ DeBonta, so now we wouldn't want that anymore. But, yeah, it was just, It was a timetable thing. The Wizards were on a different timetable than where his career was, and you'd rather trade him for some assets and not have to pay him if you're not looking to pay guys. Now, down the road, great rosters, you have to pay him. The Thunder did that, and the Thunder had to trade away three key pieces to their championship this offseason. The roster just got expensive. And there's a certain point where then you have to have the next guys up. Who's the next one up? So you have to keep drafting well. The Wizards still have to be able to develop talent. Even this team could win 50 games this year, and you better still be thinking about young guys moving forward, because you're not going to be able to pay everybody. It's going to get really expensive. It's just how the NBA works. So you've got to decide whether Trey Johnson, Bilal Coulibaly, Keyshawn George, you hope A.J. Abansa, Bub Carrington, Will Riley, all these young guys are a part of the roster, and then what it's going to cost to actually pay them and what this roster is going to look like. Another reason why paying Anthony Davis four for 275 is psychotic. Again, I don't think they're going to do it. Listen, he wants to be a good teammate. He wants to work out with some of these guys. He's working out with, you know, Trae Young and everything. But, like, all these dudes work out all the time in the offseason. It doesn't mean anything. He's on his own timetable. Anthony Davis is on his own. He wants to play for a team that's looking to win a championship now, not a team that's looking to make it to the playoffs. That's where the Wizards are. They're not a title contender yet. They could be in a couple of years, but they're not there yet. But it would be psychotic after you pay Trae Young $212 to then pay Anthony Davis to where that contract's going to be up when he's in his late 30s with all the injuries he's had. Come on. No way. I don't believe for one second the Wizards actually plan on signing him to a long-term deal. I absolutely believe that they're talking to Rich Paul behind the scenes and saying, look, we get it, right? We're not on the same timetable as where Anthony Davis is. We can't pay him that. You know that's not going to happen, but we want to make sure that we're in good standing with this whole situation. So we'll make it seem like we're negotiating in good faith. Just get it. If he's out there and he's healthy, maybe we can move him. We get some assets in return. He goes to a contender. You go from there. Because if Anthony Davis is healthy to start the season and there's a team like, and again, I keep throwing this team out there, and it doesn't mean that it's actually the case, but let's just say the Denver Nuggets come calling, because the Nuggets have done nothing this offseason. They were part of that trade. They got Julian Reese in that five-team trade that happened yesterday with the Wizards. Okay, fine. The Nuggets really did nothing this offseason, and Nikola Jokic looked a little bit upset after they lost in the first round last year, and they haven't done much since they won that title. And we've seen this formula time and time again, right? I always talk about how, you know, when a player is negotiating his contract in the NFL and he holds out, it's the same thing. You go through the don't show up, then you hold in, then you get mad and talk publicly maybe, or someone says it, then you request a trade, and it's like this process. Vita Vea just got a one-year, $30 million deal. He requested a trade. It's all a game. But it's a similar situation even here now where, you know, this Wizards team has got to make sure that they've got a level of balance that's there. And if it means Anthony Davis is out there at the beginning of the season and he looks good, and the Nuggets are like, oh God, we're starting to see those early signs, which is the same formula that Giannis went through, or anybody else that's been with their team that eventually sees the window closing and wants to get traded, Nikola Jokic starts getting upset. Now again, he's signing a long-term deal. You can also sign a long-term deal and then ask for a trade. But what if the Nuggets are like, oh man, Anthony Davis would be a great, you know, we could just get 50 games out of him, a rim protector for us. Like, teams will talk themselves into a certain player and getting the most out of them all the time. All the time. And Anthony Davis at 33, if he looks healthy at the start of this season, man, there are going to be teams that are like, so what do you think of Anthony Davis? It might not be like two first-round picks that are, you know, aren't protected, or they might be heavily protected and there's a second round. And but like, if Alex Saar gets to the point where he's developing enough where you maybe don't want Anthony Davis and Alex Saar next to him, and maybe it's you slide Alex Saar down to the four, and then DeAndre Ayton's your center for now, and you start thinking about what that's going to look like moving forward, but you also have draft picks, which are the younger guys that you bring in when this roster starts to get all expensive. It's this whole process, and I'm telling you, it's coming together with this team. It doesn't mean that they won't screw some things up. It doesn't mean they're not going to get everything right. But what I am telling you is there is actually a plan with this organization now that we have not seen in a long, long, long time. And the last time they really had a bright future was when John Wall and Bradley Beal were in their early and mid-20s, and they were both homegrown guys drafted, and it was like they built this team the way it needed to go, and then everybody got hurt. So again, some stuff is out of your control, but this Wizards team has got a blueprint down now that makes a lot of sense. All right, screw Ben Strober. I want you to let him know, Anthony, he's dead to me for bailing on us last minute, and you tell him that. Also, check out his podcast.
What? I got you.
What? All right, good. Yeah, make sure you tell him that. I'm very mad at Ben Strober, and he now has to make it up to me. Nick Ashew on the Team 980. There's always teams that still think they can squeeze more out of a player, right? That's why I really believe that Anthony Davis would have value on the trade market with a nice start to the season for the Wizards. And then some other team wants to give him an extension. You might say, well, oh, give me another example. Well, I will. How about James Harden signed a three-year, $97 million deal with the Cavs today? James Harden, who continuously flops in the playoffs, has done it his entire career, is constantly getting made fun of for being fat, although I feel like half the time people just alter these photos. I don't know what's real anymore. But James Harden continues to be a lightning rod for criticism, yet continues to get paid. Time and time again. And yeah, if you're the Cavs, right, this is another example. If you were the Cleveland Cavaliers who just signed him to that three-year, $97 million deal, and he's bounced around the league, right? What were your other options? You want to still, I mean, they just signed Donovan Mitchell to a big deal, and the Cavs have decided that the Donovan Mitchell-James Harden backcourt is the way to go. And you know what? That's a team that made the Eastern Conference Finals last year, got swept, and probably just maxed out exactly with where they're going to be. Like, that's it. So there's always, like, one extra contract and one other team that thinks they can get the most out of a certain player. And some of it's just based on desperation or a lack of options. I mean, really, Cavs didn't have a ton of options. Once LeBron went to Philadelphia, that was like, that's it. We're going to have to go back to Harden, I guess, at this point now. James Harden has earned, or now his total earnings in the NBA, Anthony, they're going to reach $511 million. He's the fourth player in NBA history to get over half a billion dollars in total earnings. LeBron James, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, and now James Harden.
Man, that's a lot of money.
It's a lot, man. And look, the thing is I think people have forgotten. Like, James Harden in his prime, look, he was a bucket. You may hate the free throws, and you may hate the constant foul baiting. James Harden averaged, what, 35 a season one time?
Yep.
I mean, dude could score, and he would do it in creative ways. And, I mean, look, this past season, he still averaged over 23 points a game, 8 assists. Like, there's a lot left in the tank. It's just a matter of what happens in the playoffs, and, like, that's not what you're going to get. Man, when he was in Houston, 26 a game, 26 a game, 25, 27, 29, 29, 30, 36, 34, 25, 25. Like, guy could score. And I think some of it is just that, like, because he's bounced around to so many different teams, because sometimes he just looks fat, because of the whole strip club jokes, and it's just like there's been this buildup on top of, obviously, the failures in the playoffs. James Harden has sometimes, his reputation has gotten clouded by some things that don't tell you the full story. Because he is going to go down as one of the all-time great scorers in the NBA. Oh, and by the way, he also can go out and get you 8, 9, 10 assists in his prime, too. But if you look at what he's earned, like, you wouldn't put him in the same category as LeBron James, Steph Curry, or Kevin Durant. But he got paid as much as them. And that's why, honestly, Anthony, I really think that Anthony Davis gets traded this year. I think Anthony Davis gets traded early in the season because there is going to be a team that sees him playing well and says, let's get him while he's healthy before somebody else does, and they're willing to pay him. I just, 4 for $275 is crazy, and he might not get that much, but I do think that there is going to be a team that would be willing to trade with the Wizards. Like, I feel like most people don't feel this way. Am I the only one that thinks there's still going to be trade value for him? Because I feel like nobody else seems to believe that except me.
I mean, there'll be trade value if he's healthy and he's playing.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a big if.
And it is a big if, and I understand that. So if you're the Wizards, you got to manage this smart, right? You got to not play him in back-to-backs, maybe, and if there's any nagging injury, maybe you sit him out, and you just make sure that he doesn't actually miss real time. Because the thing is he'll also be looking to maximize his income, maximize his return, maximize whatever winning he has left in his career. If it's not with the Wizards and it's somewhere else, like, it's going to benefit both of them to work together to figure out what this future looks like. I just don't think he's here past the trade deadline. And honestly, if you're the Wizards, you want to make that trade long before the actual trade deadline. Though, yeah. Some teams get more desperate once you actually hit the deadline because, right, deadlines actually create results. So there's... I just... His... what he brings to the table, there's still enough there if you're looking at Anthony Davis, where there is going to be at least one team, I think, that would be willing to give the Wizards enough in terms of assets that make a trade valuable. I just don't think he's a long-term part of the future of this team. I really don't.
Yeah, I mean, again, we're young. I think we're going to experiment and see, you know, how things go. But I don't know. I think they've made it clear that they do want him here for that veteran leadership. I think he really just wants to get paid. And if we're going to pay him, I think he's going to be willing to stay.
Or he could get paid and then ask for a trade, which happens a lot now.
Man.
You think about it, right? And then it's a contract you can't move. And I don't think there's any way to give him 4 for $275. Because think about this. After this season, then there's still a player option, right? You got that $62 million player option that's on the books for him. And then, so it's like you can waive the option and you can sign an extension. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, there's a lot of different things that you can do. But, yeah, sure. I mean, if they offered him a full max, he's going to sign it. There's no way in hell, Anthony, that he doesn't do it. But it's if you start offering less, like 2 years, right? 2 years at like 50-something million a year. Are the Wizards willing to do that short-term with him? I think that's the only way that he stays, is if they're both willing to do something like that, where he doesn't get the 4 years, but he knows he's not going to get that from anywhere else, and he takes it here, and then maybe... I mean, again, he could ask for a trade in a year. There's a chance that it's like, I just want to finish my career somewhere else, and he goes to the freaking Thunder or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's likely as well. I mean, there's just so many, you know, different scenarios in which this could go, but I'm pretty sure there's going to be a team around the trade deadline that's making a push that, you know, will be looking to see if, you know, AD is available, if he's playing well, if he's healthy. And they could definitely use him. Like, I think he's a great piece on a championship team.
Oh,
like, he doesn't want to be the number one, but him being the 2-3, well, not maybe not even the 2. If he's a 3-4, like, that is a great, you know, piece to add. I just wholeheartedly believe he doesn't want to be the one anymore.
It's got to be a team. What if the Clippers are like, we need somebody here, and they trade for Anthony Davis? I mean, it can be teams that are like right on that cusp of desperation, and they feel like that's going to move the needle. Again, the Nuggets are a team I keep throwing out there, but who knows? What about the Timberwolves? What if Minnesota is like, yeah, that'd be great. What about Portland? Portland's already been interested anyway. I mean, you know, they won 42 games last year. Is that a team that decides they want to make that jump? Maybe it's the Warriors. The Warriors did nothing and they're old. Even though LeBron's not going to be there, maybe they still do that. I'm just not in this school of thought that people have where it's like, oh, Anthony Davis is untradeable. Says who? There's always teams that'll look to justify that. The Wizards just did it and the Mavericks just did it. Anthony Davis, it's not like he just started having an injury history, right? It's not like that just became his reputation. And I get it. The Mavericks had a dum-dum for a general manager, but like, he thought that was a good idea because he justified it with the idea that Anthony Davis could play defense and it would help them win championships. And he traded freaking Luka Doncic for him. Anthony Davis was missing games left and right for the Lakers. And then the Wizards even did it, and they saw him barely play for the Mavs. Again, it was a different situation with where the Wizards were. It made sense because they were buying low at that point. But there's always going to be a team. There's always going to be a team. And sometimes it's a complete surprise. But if you're the Wizards and you get a chance to get some assets back in return, I'd do it. I'd also throw out a team like the Nets. Why not? The Nets are desperate. The Nets might do that too. Not that Anthony Davis would be happy there, but they got an owner that's really pissed off the Knicks just won a championship, and the Nets are irrelevant. Sometimes desperate teams make desperate moves. See the Cleveland Browns and Deshaun Watson. Nick Ashew on the Team 980. I have hated this idea for so long, and if the NFL does it, it's a horrible idea. Oh, Nick Ashew, Team 980. So Roger Goodell has always pushed for, you know, expanding the game internationally, which is smart in the way that they're doing it now. Now, I know players don't like the travel, and Kyle Shanahan is one of the coaches that's come out and just been like, this doesn't benefit us at all. The Commanders will be playing in London week 4, so that's a home game that's taken away from them that instead is in London playing the Colts. But this is inevitable. The NFL is going to keep playing more games internationally. I mean, at some point, they're probably going to have an international week where you just have games on 24 hours a day in all time zones. There's a game in Fiji. There's a game in Australia. There's a game in South Africa. There's a game in Iceland. I don't know. I mean, they could do it anywhere at this point. And you're going to build the game worldwide. And that's a good thing. But Roger Goodell now says that there is, quote, no doubt that they will have an NFL team that is international. Now, could this mean Canada or, say, like Mexico City? All right. At least it's near the U.S. You're not across the pond in foggy old London, right? You're actually in a place that's a little bit easier to travel to. It makes the logistics a little bit simpler. But here's the thing. This all started with London. The NFL has been playing games in London forever. They've been force-feeding their worst teams to everybody over in London since long before Ted Lasso was a thing, and they were trying to give them our football, hoping that we would start to expand the game, and it's worked. It has worked. But to have a team that is actually like the London... I don't know. I don't even know what we call them. The London Fish and Chips... It's the first thing I could think of, Anthony. I don't know if that's actually the case, but hopefully they won't go with that name. But have a team in London. Do you know what the logistics are for that? Let's just start with this. I hate this so much. I hate this idea so much. We can start with travel. We talk about all of the miles traveled for teams in the NFL, right? Oh, all the places you will go. Yeah, okay. Well, when you're playing in London and you've got a six-hour flight just to get to the East Coast... That's a rough start of travel. So you'd probably have some sort of hub in the U.S. So would you stay here 3 weeks, a month? And you're going to have guys in, I don't know, where would we make the hub? Would it be in the middle of the U.S. so travel's easier to the East Coast and the West Coast? And you've got the London Fish and Chips have a team facility in Wyoming? I mean, where would this be? And then you've got guys that have to stay at a place in London. If you play for the London Fish and Chips, you've also then got to have a place to stay for your random hub that's in the middle of the country so you can travel to the East Coast and the West Coast. Oh, and then you've got to also get free agents, right? How is a team in London going to sign free agents? Because there are going to be quite a few players that are just like, I'm not going over there. You got families, you want to move them to another country? That's not hard. Now, some might jump at the opportunity. Sure, they might. You're still limiting that organization and what they can do in free agency. Then you've got to actually deal with what the travel looks like for other teams. How does that work? So then are we just going to keep doing it? So every week, whenever they're, are they going to spend a month over in London? And then it's a different team every week that's flying over there. So now you got more teams traveling more miles to fly 6 hours, if not more. What if you're coming from the West Coast? So what if the 49ers play the London Fish and Chips? Do they go East Coast first? So then they go to the East Coast and they play the Giants. Oh, and then after that's done, then they fly to London. So then you've got a longer road trip for teams on the West Coast. What is Seattle going to do? That's a long flight just to the East Coast. Then you're going to London on top of that. The logistics of this are such a grind. This is where the NFL is overthinking things. This is where they overthink things. Where you start adding extra games, extra days of the week, longer flight, more just miles in the air and travel and the grind and all that. You are going to hurt your product. There is a certain point where the NFL will go too far. I mean, they're getting to a point now where they want to renegotiate their TV contracts, right? They're mad at NBC because NBC is paying $1.2 billion for the NBA, and they're only paying $1 billion for Sunday Night Football, even though it's one game versus a huge package of games. That doesn't matter. For the NFL, it's you're paying the NBA more dollars than you're paying us. We want more. The NFL is going to get to a point where they're going to start pricing out all of these networks because they can't afford what the NFL wants anymore. And the NFL is going to think that they can just hold tech companies like YouTube and Amazon hostage. Like, oh yeah, you'll pay us all the money we want. Here's the spoiler alert. YouTube doesn't need the NFL. YouTube likes having football. And yeah, they've got YouTube TV, but I'm talking YouTube. Nothing is watched more on TVs in people's homes than YouTube. YouTube. That is the new TV. But they're doing it without the NFL. See, regular TV networks desperately needs the NFL. They need live show. They need live programming, right? There's nothing that brings eyeballs more to your network than the NFL. Period. It's not even arguable. Yes, other live sports help, but the NFL is the monster, and TV networks need it. YouTube's already thriving. Amazon's already thriving. Netflix is already thriving. Now, has Netflix had some ups and downs? Sure. And you know, again, Prime is a million different other things mixed in there. But these are successful companies that don't need the NFL to the point where the NFL is going to want so much, thinking that they just have these deep pockets at YouTube or these deep pockets at Netflix, and Netflix is going to go, nah, it's too much now. We don't want it anymore. We'll be good. YouTube, we don't need it. We got creators left and right building stuff. That's literally our business model. You're extra. We don't need that. The NFL has got to be really, really careful because they're getting to that point now. Extra game in the regular season is coming. We're going to have another one in the 18th game. Thursday night football is already hit or miss, right? Sometimes you get good games and sometimes you don't. Short week, offenses look like they're struggling a little bit at times. Teams are a little banged up, sluggish, whatever the case is. It's not a good product a lot of times on Thursday night. Then they want to start adding other games of the week. We're adding Christmas even though, you know, it's a Wednesday. Okay. What makes football so great, and specifically the NFL, but college football is the same way, is that it becomes an event because you're not seeing it all the time. It's the old absence makes the heart grow fonder. But like it is, right? You get to a point where you haven't had football in days. I mean, look at people who are like, preseason football injected into my veins. It's like those are third stringers. It's the Hall of Fame game. But people still want to watch it. It's still a thing. You get to a point where you're going to water down the entire product too much. Now, it's a long way to go because the NFL has monster ratings. I understand that. But I can just see this. They can be, I mean, they can make this something that starts to, like, they're going to have to figure out what the future looks like for the NFL. And it should not be a game in London or a team in London. I mean, Anthony, I could maybe argue that Canada could have some NFL teams. The problem is that Canada really loves Canadian football. Like, I don't know how much they would embrace even our football. Their football is a little bit different. I think that might even be an issue for them.
Yeah, it is definitely different. The fields are different. Actually, one of my friends and frat brothers, he used to play in the Canadian Football League. And he always, you know, talks about like how different it is. But they do love their football up there is what I'll tell you, because he said the crowds, the family, I mean, the friends, the family, they all come out and support, you know, their product of football that they have up there. So it definitely would be an interesting dynamic to see, you know, who goes to what games. But at the end of the day, it is sports. Just like we have the DC Defenders here and like the Washington Commanders. Granted, they don't happen during the same season. But if you're a fan of sports and you want to get out to a game, like, you're going to spend your hard-earned money going out and, you know, watching a product. So if the product is good, I think they'll still go out and, you know, support it.
Even if it's in London.
Now, London, yeah. Yeah. I mean, we see people over in Europe, they pop out and
they do
go to games and stuff like that. So,
but see, here's the difference here. It's like when we have like Premier League friendlies or something at, you know, the Commander's Stadium, it's an event, right? And it's like a one-off thing or it's something that's special. If you actually have a home team that plays American football in London, you've got to get fans wanting to go see that every single week, which I do think they could. And they're obviously not going to do that if they don't think there's enough interest there. And it's been like London has been doing this enough where you've built up young fans that love American football. It exists. There's no question it's there. But it's going to be really hard to have an organization that's actually there for all those other logistics I talked about, right? Like, how long are you staying in the U.S. versus over in London? Do they have to work that schedule around? How are you going to get free agents to go there? Not everybody's going to want to go play in London, live in London. Some might jump at the opportunity, but a lot won't, especially when you got kids. I think that's tough. I think that's a really tough sell, and it would set that organization back behind a lot of other organizations just because it's not that London may not be a great city. It's just that it's not in the U.S., and I think a lot of players would just choose other places. And I think that, Anthony, would be a I think it'd be a problem for them. I think it would hold that organization back should they have one over there in London.
Yeah, definitely would be tough. And I forget the metric, but they definitely do use some metric in the NFL where they basically map out all the miles traveled by, you know, certain NFL teams and the impact that it has on, you know, a team's win or loss record. I want to say 2 years ago, we were like top 10 in least amount of miles traveled, and that ended up boding well for us because, again, rest and recovery is huge for these athletes. So if you're constantly on the road, in the air, not getting the treatment that you need, the sleep that you need, that's going to have a toll and effect on your body. So I think you mentioned, like, if you're on the West Coast and having to travel to Europe, like, that would be brutal. Like, mid-season, having to deal with that. So, yeah, I mean, I don't really like Europe being a permanent location. I think if you're in North America, Mexico, Canada, like, I think that may work slightly better. I mean, you look at the MLB, you look at the NHL, like, they have teams that are in Canada, like, multiple teams in the NHL that are in Canada, and they somehow make it work. So I think those would be the two destinations that I would love for, you know, an international team to be.
The 49ers are going to travel 37,862 miles, air miles, this year with their schedule. That's the most. The Panthers will travel just 8,641 miles, which is the fewest in 2026. 49ers have a grind of a schedule, and they already got six, seven guys on IR? Right now. The 49ers are going to make the longest road trip of the season because they've got to go 15,000 air miles from Santa Clara to Melbourne for week one. Now, it's week one, so it's not like you're jumping around and you're in the middle of the schedule, at least there. But it's just, this is why Kyle Shanahan hates it. I mean, he came out and said, like, it doesn't benefit the players, it benefits the league, but it doesn't. And again, expanding the game internationally is smart. It does make sense. But for all the stuff that you still laid out there, Anthony, like, you still have guys that are actual humans that this will affect them differently than other teams because there are teams that don't travel as much and have a grind of a schedule. And that stuff late in the season, it wears down a guy's body. The sleep's not good. Like, the recovery's not there. Like, we know recovery matters. Sleep matters. Like, we can have this grind culture that's out there, sleeping 4 hours a night, blah, blah. No, man, like, if you're a pro athlete, you got to get sleep. That's when your body recovers the most. That is, you have to have that. And when guys are getting screwed up with that, and they're tired and worn down, there's beyond just like, oh, it's tough, you're a football player. There's also, hey, it's a bad product on the field. Short weeks, like, Thursday night games really aren't great. I'd rather have Monday night football doubleheaders and no Thursday night game. I really would. Because the games are so hit or miss that sometimes you watch it and go, is this even football? And then sometimes they're good. But it's just too up and down when they do that. And that's what drives me insane. Though I do think at some point I could see a Super Bowl going overseas to a place like London, and that would make more sense because it's still one big off event. But you're going to piss a lot of people off going, you've taken our final game and our biggest game, and you've taken it outside the country, and I think that would make a lot of people upset too. But I think we are at the point now where the NFL has just got to be careful with some of the places they're really pushing because it can hurt this league. It's not invincible, all right? It's not invincible. But it is still king in this country. All right, we'll talk to Kevin Sheehan next. Nick Ashew, Team 980.